From spooky legends past, down through generations, to haunted locations that hold a ghostly past. Come one, come all, come finders and seekers, hear the creepy side of Nepa.
Welcome to the Creepy Side of Nepa. I am Dan Kozlowski.
And I'm Nora Herjick.
Before we get into tonight's episode, I would just like to ask everyone new to the podcast, if you just take a moment and like and subscribe to our podcast on whichever platform you'd listen to us on. And if you are a repeat listener, thanks for joining us.
On tonight's episode of The Creepy Side of Nepa, we have Alyssa, who is the case manager and investigator for NEPA Paranormal. Welcome to the show, Alyssa.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So the one question we always like to ask people first to get started is, how did you always have an interest in the paranormal? How did you get started with it all?
Yeah, I definitely have ever since I was very young. I don't know if it was like a blessing or a curse, but the house that I grew up in New Jersey definitely had paranormal activity. And I think that's where everything kind of started for me. So it was rooted at a very young age, I would say.
Are you more sensitive towards like spirits and the paranormal then? And do you think it came from living in a house that had some activity in it?
You know, I think so. And it's funny that you mentioned that, because I think, you know, in the 13 years that I've been doing this, you definitely tend to build a sensitivity towards like energy and stuff like that when you walk into a home, or, you know, kind of get like a story from a client. It's interesting. But I think because I had things happen at such a young age that it was kind of there from the beginning, where, you know, I kind of knew when something was a little off or when something was going on. I always, you know, questioned it and tried to figure out if it was something, you know, natural or supernatural.
So did you actually do investigating before NEPA Paranormal? Is that something you started then?
No, I did absolutely no investigating before NEPA Paranormal. And it was just by chance that I ended up meeting the founders of the team. I was managing the Hot Topic over in the Wyoming Valley Mall 13 years ago. And these wonderful people came into my store, and they had these really cool t-shirts on that said NEPA Paranormal. And I'm like, what is that? And we just kind of got to talking, and I was so interested. And I said, well, you know, if you're looking for any new team members, I would absolutely love to join you guys. And funny enough, they were looking for some people to join the team because they had just jumped on board to film for Animal Planet's The Haunted, their very first season. And funny enough, my very first investigation with the team was featured on Animal Planet.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, what a way to jump into things, right?
Exactly, what a way to get started.
Intimidating.
You know, a little bit, but I think, you know, with the background I have with just like working around people and just being put into situations where I'm you know, constantly adapting, you know, I was happy to jump right in and join the fun, and it turned into a really great investigation and a really good episode, so I was happy.
So how do you go about starting your investigation into, you know, anything that somebody's experiencing or at a location?
Right. So we get inquiries. I get weekly inquiries. It could just be like one inquiry a week, or, you know, I could get, I mean, a handful of emails a week. And basically right now with, you know, with the pandemic situation that we're dealing with, I kind of have to take things a little bit more on like a priority level. But normally I would just like talk to the client over the phone and just say, hey, like, you know, what seems to be going on? Just get as much information as I possibly can, just to kind of see if it's valid. I'm sure you guys know with, you know, interviewing people, that can kind of gauge a person by just talking to them and getting a feel for, you know, the story and everything, to see if it's valid, or maybe if it's something you could say, oh, well, you know, I could, yeah, it doesn't sound like you have too much going on. Like, we'll just come over and stage the property, or, you know, we'll come for an hour and see what's going on. But that's basically how everything gets set up from the get-go, is you just talk to the client, see what exactly is going on, and then gauge from that, like what needs to be done and how many people I would need to bring and what equipment would have to be brought with us and everything like that.
Yeah, doing this kind of work, it definitely seems like you need to have some sort of screening process involved.
Oh, there definitely is a screening process. And thankfully so. In the past, I mean, I'm sure my team remembers from years ago, we had a client that I think we investigated his house one night and the next day he checked himself into a psych facility. I was like, oh, yeah, it makes sense because there was nothing going on in his house, but he was seeing things and hearing things. But, you know, he thankfully got the help that he needed.
Right. Yeah, that would definitely explain it then.
Absolutely.
While you're investigating, do you take the approach of, you know, sort of trying to debunk any of these experiences that people might be having?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I also make it a point to have a few different personality types on my team as well. You know, you have me, who is a believer, but I'm also going to try to look for the truth in something. And then you have, you know, my team member, Bob Smith, who he is very level-headed, he's going to look for the truth before he says that it's paranormal. And then you have Randy, where Randy, you know, he kind of brings like a skeptic approach into things. And he's like, no, it's not like that. It can't, you know, it's definitely, you know, something that we can explain. And if it's absolutely something we can't explain, then of course, you know, our investigative tools come into play. And then, you know, we have Megan and Frank Goretzky, who are both seasoned paranormal investigators, and Mark Hromison, who has been investigating with me with NEPA Paranormal from the very beginning. We were both newbies going into the very first investigation. And then we have AJ. AJ is also looks for a scientific approach. So, you know, I like to have different opinions. I don't have, you know, the people who are like, oh my God, like, did you hear that? Did you see that? Like, no, it's not even like that. Like what you see on TV, like we're very, you know, respectful and kind of go into things a little differently than normal paranormal team would, I suppose.
And when you go on an investigation, does the whole NEPA paranormal team usually go, or do you have like different teams to go to different types of investigations?
Well, it's basically just whoever can make it. I understand like life gets in the way. This isn't a priority for everybody. You know, we all have jobs. We all have lives.
Right, of course.
Families. So it's really whoever can make it. We have a really great communication in the group. And I just kind of throw it out there. I'm like, hey, guys, you know, case request in Plains for Saturday.
I guess the question I was asking, like, do you have people who specialize in certain things? Or do you guys do it all together?
No, I think we all just kind of do it together. We don't have, you know, specific people that specialize in, you know, certain things. I mean, some of us are more sensitive than others to, you know, energy and stuff like that. But no, we're all equals in this group, which is really nice.
Do you guys focus, I mean, obviously you're called NEPA Paranormal. Do you focus just on Northeastern Pennsylvania, or have you guys done investigations outside of the area as well?
Yeah, we've definitely done investigations outside the area. I happen to be really good friends with a producer from Discovery Travel Channel. And there are some cases that she's thrown me over the past year that have been out of the state. We did go to upstate New York, like right past the Hudson River Valley over the summer, which was an amazing investigation. It was a farmhouse from the 1700s. It was insane. And the activity that we had there was phenomenal. But no, we were just in Harrisburg over the summer as well. We filmed at the, we investigated at Harrisburg State Lunatic Asylum. That was another one that was set up by Travel Channel that we filmed for Ghost Nation.
Out of all of your locations that you have gone to, are there any stories that just really stick with you, whether it's like positive or negative, or, you know, there was just so much energy going on?
Yeah, definitely. We were invited to investigate the Tilly Pierce House in Gettysburg, which is right adjacent from the battlefield in Gettysburg. And it was used as a field hospital. So we're talking like very historically rich. Like there are like cannonballs wedged into these buildings that are just still there. They're just sitting there. It's amazing. You know, we had team members experience things from the get-go, like just being locked out of their rooms. You know, they'd hear footsteps in the hallways, things were going missing, what have you. The one piece of evidence that I did send to you was caught around 3 o'clock in the morning at the Tilly Pierce house upstairs in the library. And if anybody has ever visited the Tilly Pierce house that's listening, the way that the house is set up upstairs, there's a long hallway that connects all the bedrooms. And then the library is an open alcove of sorts with no doors. So you can clearly see into the hallway. Now, Katie and Mark were up very late investigating. I think everybody else was kind of sleeping and resting. They were just kind of chit-chatting and asking questions. And all of a sudden, something screamed at them in a different language.
You all right there, Anthony? You were shaking.
I'm not sorry.
Is my mother here in this building with us?
Yeah! Oh, she beat me up, but she's in the house. She threw her back into the hospital. Oh, she beat me up. Oh, she beat me up.
Very interesting clip. That's definitely, you could definitely hear it, but you can't understand what they're saying. Like you said, it's a different language.
It is. We actually, I brought that clip to Wilkes University, and I also called down at a school down near Lancaster, Pennsylvania. That happens to be Old Pennsylvania Dutch. And
that would make sense.
Yes. And, you know, this lovely professor that I talked to, I said, I need you to translate something for me. And he's more than happy to. And I sent him the clip and he was just so taken back by it. And he said, can you please explain the context? And I said, yes, absolutely. And when I told him, he couldn't believe it, but it was just so clear. And it was basically, it's an older gentleman and he's yelling at them and basically saying like, what are you doing here? Why are you here?
Wow.
You need to go to bed or you need to leave. And in the clip, I mean, Katie and Mark, you could see, There was ambient light in that area that you could see things. And there was somebody screaming at them that wasn't there. And they were scared. And, you know, they heard this entity walk down the hallway, go into one of the bedrooms, and was walking around in one of the bedrooms. You can hear the door close, but, you know, there was nothing there.
So with that recording, you could definitely tell the spirit or whatever that was trying to interact with them. They knew that was there and they were trying to tell them to get out or get away.
Yes, 100%. It was absolutely intelligent. That's what we call a disembodied voice, where you can hear it with your own ears. There's just nothing that that voice is attached to. They couldn't see anything. There was nothing there. But there was the voice and there were the footsteps and, you know, it was physically opening and closing doors.
Evidence that we had in the show in the past, they always went back and they heard the recordings after the fact. They don't really hear them in person.
Right. Those are EVPs. I mean, I could send those to you guys. I have tons and tons and tons. But that is one of the most compelling pieces of evidence that we've captured, I would say, where just something screaming at you that you can't see.
That was going to be my next question was if they could hear it in real time or if it was only after they played back the recording. Because...
Oh, no. They heard that real time. So their responses that you heard were Katie's going, Mark, I'm scared. Mm-hmm. And Mark responds to it. And, you know, says like, you know, they're trying to rationalize it because they don't know what just happened.
Right.
So, yeah, that was real time. They heard that.
Does that happen frequently that you guys have experienced disembodied voices that you could actually hear in real time? Or is it more frequently like something that you have to have like an EVP that you play back and then you can hear it that you didn't hear at the time?
Yeah, more frequently EVPs, I would say. Those are more common than anything. You know, we have had our disembodied voices where we could audibly hear it and then we have to go back and listen to it on the recorder to really, you know, clarify, oh, yes, we did hear something, because it might have been like muffled or muted or something like that. Ever since, I would say, that specific incident, I've never had anything scream like that at me or any of my team members ever.
Any other investigations that sort of pop into your head when you think back of your favorite ones?
You know, I do. There were some local cases that we had. I don't even know if I would call them my favorites because they were, you know, not great. Like they were pretty scary. You know, we did have a residence in Whitehaven years ago, and this was one that I was not brave enough to go back to for the reveal because of personal experiences and, you know, everything that had happened there. It was a pretty intense house. The energy was very intense. So driving down to this property, we were called in because of the activity that this new homeowner was experiencing. He had just moved in with his daughter, and it was on the end of a dirt road in Whitehaven. Beautiful house in the woods. The closest neighbor was like maybe a half a mile down the street. Indoor pool in the house. It was great. It was a really neat house. But we walked into the house. You just feel disgusting. You just feel this sense of you just want to get out. You don't want to be there. And it's just a gross feeling. And so we had activity from the get-go. We were sitting in the living room, which was just off of the indoor pool in the house. And it was me and a few of the girls that we had in the group at the time. And the boys were outside surveying like the yard and everything in the woods. And it sounded like a party was going on in the house. You hear music, you hear people talking and splashing in the pool. You could hear shoes clicking around the pool. There was nobody there. We were the only ones there. The homeowners left. Like, we were the only ones in that house. It was just wild, like, to the point where we were running around the house trying to look for a radio or something that had gone off, and there was nothing. You just had this awful feeling of being watched. We had temperature drops that ranged anywhere from 15 to 25 degrees on command. And come to find out that this house was used as a party house for a very wealthy man. He had lived this double life, and he used that house for like crazy parties. And there were 17 reported deaths in that house. 17. Think about that for a second.
Wow.
How many people, yeah, died in that house. And that was reported. So God knows how many deaths were unreported, because the guys, when they were walking around the property, they found a few questionable mounds in the backyard that were the size of a human. So that was one house that I would never go back to, just based on the feeling that I had while being there. It was just awful and terrible. And I think the other one that sticks in my head the most is a case that we had in West Pittston, I would say about 8 years ago now, that we had to call the Scranton Diocese in for. It was the only case that we had to call an exorcist priest in for. And, you know, 13 years, that's the one. And it sticks in my head because it was only three of us that investigated there, but all three of us were affected to the point that Mark and I had to go through the rites of exorcism, like with a priest, to kind of free ourselves of whatever we came into contact with at that house.
What were some of the things that happened in the house that you kind of knew you were messing with something a little more than the normal?
Well, in this instance, it was a gentleman that we were helping, and he had four children. He also had his mother living in the house. An elderly woman was there, and he would be alone at home, kind of on the couch, like napping, and something would come right up to his ear and speak to him to where he could feel the breath on his ear, and it would blend from each of his children's voices into another and speak to him like in his children's voice. It would also attack the grandmother. There was a dark figure that he could see in the house, like lurking in the corners, that was large, like larger than the doorways. And I think the turning point for us was, you know, when we actually knew that we were dealing with something not of this world. We use a device called a spirit box. I don't know if you guys have seen that being used on, say, like Ghost Adventures or, you know, Ghost Hunters or anything like that. But the FB7 spirit box is basically a device that it scans through radio frequencies, like white noise, very quickly. And so spirits are able to communicate with us using their own voices and giving us like real-time answers to questions and such.
It does seem to be a popular device. I know a lot of our past guests on the show have mentioned that same device that they've used.
Yeah, it's not always my favorite, only because I think the spirit box, if you hear something, you can take that however you want to take it. It might not be actual evidence. Personally, I like to go with personal experiences and also EVPs and, you know, our other devices that we use. But in this case, we were using the spirit box and we were asking a question in regards to the spirit that was there. When the homeowner would communicate with the spirit through a Ouija board, which I never condone to all of your listeners, Ouija boards are bad. Don't do it. So he would communicate with the spirit with a Ouija board, and the spirit would come through with the initials, the letter B and the letter P. And, you know, we were asking some questions and we would say, who, you know, where is BP? No answer. Silence. We say, you know, who is BP? Nothing. Silence. And finally we said, what is BP? And this very deep voice came through the spirit box, and clear as day, it said, it is the leader. And, you know, AJ, Mark, and I looked at each other and we just kind of, we shut it off. And we said to our client, I'm like, we have to go because, you know, I need to evaluate what's going on here, because I think what's here is very bad. While we were investigating, things were getting thrown across the room. We were hearing loud bangs, heavy footsteps going up and down the stairs. Nobody was doing it. It was pretty scary. West Pittston is very, you know, energy rich and historically rich. I have a lot of cases in West Pittston over by the river. This one I think was caused by a few different factors. One major thing was, you know, him using the Ouija board and opening up a doorway for whatever this was to come through. So, you know, we kind of made the joint decision, my team and I, to contact a priest to come and help us, because I knew I couldn't do it. We couldn't get rid of this, whatever it was.
Of course.
Kind
of like, why do you think that West Pittston has, you know, so much activity? Like, is there anything that you know of that could have, you know, caused that mm-hmm. to happen?
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of bloodshed in our valley. There was a lot of bloodshed specifically in West Pittston, you know, between settlers and Native Americans. And then, you know, during the Revolutionary War, there was a lot of awful, awful things that happened in West Pittston. A lot of deaths and casualties. And I think, you know, the river being there, water is used as like a conduit and holds on to energy. And I really think that that has a lot to do with why I have so many case requests in West Pittston specifically.
That makes sense. How do you guys, I mean, obviously you just mentioned a very extreme case right there, and mm-hmm. you had to call the Diocese of Scranton and, you know, get somebody out there to perform an exorcism and everything, but like, how do you guys sort of regroup with yourselves, like, after you experience something so negative like that on an investigation? Like, that has to just weigh so heavy on you as a person.
And it does. You know, you kind of take those things into account when you go into investigations. You don't know what you're dealing with. Did I have any idea that we would be dealing with something demonic in that case? No, absolutely not. Because 99.9% of my cases are non-demonic. I never thought in a million years I would have come into contact with something like that. So, you know, the way we kind of regrouped in that case is, you know, we kind of said, okay, well, what's our goal? Our goal is to help the client. And that's really what we sought out to do. We just wanted to help him find peace in his home. And I think that would have given us like a lot of closure in that case. But it did. It took a lot of energy and a lot of time out of us, that specific one. There are no more issues. There's no more problems. I like to walk away from something feeling like completely satisfied that the client is 100% happy with, you know, the service that we provided to them.
After something that's, you know, obviously so heavy like that, do you ever have to sort of take a break from an investigation, you know, for like a couple of days or even a week or so, just because something was so, you know, dramatic?
Awful. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm pretty sure with that Whitehaven case, like, I had to take me a little bit of time off after that one, because I was just affected so much by the energy in that house. It drained me. It drained me completely. I refused to go back. And they were like, but like, you had the most personal experiences. I'm like, I don't care. You could take my word and take it back to the client. I'm not going back. Those are very few and far between where we have very intense negative cases. It just doesn't happen. a lot of things are explainable in, you know, in the paranormal world, where I could say, oh, okay, you know, it's residual energy, or, oh, all right, it is intelligent, but, you know, we can help alleviate, like, you know, whatever's going on in the house. And, you know, it's, we could figure it out. We usually can figure it out, but some cases we can't.
With the people that contact you with their paranormal investigations, is it more residents and houses, or do you get like businesses also and different properties?
Yeah, we definitely get a lot of residential cases. I do have some businesses that do contact us to assist. Not so much anymore. That used to be a big thing, I would say, like years ago. But I mean, in recent cases, I was able to investigate my chiropractor's office. She's over in Wyoming, right by, I don't know if you guys have ever heard the legend of Queen Esther and the Bloody Rock over there. She was an Indian queen. And anyway, she was alone in her office a lot during the beginning of the pandemic, just kind of doing paperwork and stuff like that at night. And I guess when you're used to being in a busy office and people being there all the time, you don't notice things. And she really started to notice that there was activity in her building. And she had contacted me, I think it was maybe April or May, or maybe April, I don't remember. But we're good friends. And she said, would you mind terribly? And I said, no, of course not. And we caught some really profound evidence, and even got the name Esther to come over the spirit box.
Tell us your name.
Esther. Oh, my.
Very interesting. Especially since it's close to the rock there, you said.
It's right there. So, and, you know, she knew, Kelly knew. She goes, I really think it's Queen Esther. I think she's here. And I was like, what would make you think that? She's like, I don't know. I just feel it. And she's a very sensitive and wonderful person. And she said it. And we got evidence to back it up. One question, you know, who's here with us? And a man's voice came through and said, a queen. And then later on, we asked, you know, could you tell us your name? And we got a female, and she said Esther, clear as day. And it was pretty awesome. Yeah.
One of the things I noticed in this area is all the buildings and locations here seem to be steeped in history, as opposed to like other parts of the country where they're sort of, they tend to be newer areas, newer development. Do you think that has something to do with the investigations and the paranormal activity here?
Absolutely. I mean, like I said before, we're very historically rich. We're lucky. We are lucky that this area is so wealthy in historical, you know, value, and just how this area was built on, like, the coal mining and everything. And I think because, you know, these houses around here are just so old that it's almost like things kind of linger. And I think that's why a lot of, you know, residences and a lot of businesses in the area. I'm not surprised anymore. I'm really not. When somebody calls me and they say to me, oh my gosh, you're going to think I'm crazy. I'm like, no, I'm not. Like, I've heard it all. So I'm really not going to think you're crazy. So tell me what's going on. And, you know, it's a lot of, oh, you know, I hear somebody walking up and down the stairs, or I see something out of the corner of my eye, or I hear voices, or I hear this, or I hear that. And I'm like, yep, yeah, okay, sounds about right. You know, we try to help them understand what exactly they're dealing with.
That's definitely really an important thing, I think, with, you know, investigating paranormal anything, is that, like, you have an open mind about it. And I mean, everybody that we've had on the podcast so far, they all always say that they get people calling them saying, you're going to think I'm crazy. And they always just say, no, like, what is it that you're experiencing? Because you guys are there to help people.
Mm-hmm. We are. And I, you know, I feel really bad. I explain to them, I kind of give them reassurance. I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm not going to think you're crazy. You're going to think I'm crazy if I tell you some stories of things that I've actually experienced, but I'm not going to think you're crazy at all. But yeah, we really go into these, like I said before, we are very respectful with investigating residential and even businesses. I don't have to deal with these ghosts when I go home. You do, not me. So, you know, why would we come into a house and antagonize a spirit or provoke a spirit. Why? Like, why would you even do that? Like, they were human once. Like, they lived there. You know, if you're dealing with a child spirit, you have to deal with it as you would a child. If it's an elderly woman spirit that you figure is in the house, deal with it as you would your grandmother. Don't be disrespectful. Obviously, if they're causing you any anxiety or, you know, sleepless nights, then, you know, then we would look into, you know, trying to cleanse the property. And I have different outlets that I can use for that and different people that help my group a lot with cleansing and clearing properties.
Right. You're not trying to, you know, agitate anything that might be there. Just if anything, debunk it and see if, you know, are we actually dealing with something paranormal or are we not? And then moving down the correct channels after that.
Correct. I mean, I've had houses that swore up and down that what they had in their house was, oh, I have a malevolent spirit and I could feel it and it makes me anxious and I just need you to get rid of it. And we go in and guess what? It's high EMF. So we tell them to unplug a lot of, you know, oh, you have too many devices plugged in this one bedroom and it's causing high EMF. That's why you can't sleep. That's why you're feeling anxious. And guess what? Once they unplug devices, everything's fine.
If any of our listeners are looking for help in their paranormal activity, how is some way they would get in contact with you?
So the easiest way to contact us is through our Facebook page, which is really easy. It's just NEPA Paranormal. There is a message option. I'm usually the one that gets all the messages. Mark also checks the messages. But if anybody has any questions, concerns, you know, wants to request an investigation, feel free to reach out to us. And I'm more than happy to help.
I'd like to thank you very much for joining us tonight. It was very interesting talking to you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Creepy Side of NEPA.
If you haven't already, be sure to like WNEP's Creepy Side of NEPA on Facebook. That is the best way to get informed on what we have planned. Until next time, enjoy The Creepy Side of NEPA.
This has been The Creepy Side of NEPA. If you have a spooky story that took place in northeastern or central Pennsylvania, send it to ghost@WNEP.com for your chance to share it on an upcoming episode. We're dying to hear from you.